When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
So we've got an exclusive today, organized by Steve Rafe. All the links will be in the description box for everybody. And Davey, who Steve has done a little bit with in the past, is ready to tell his full story. And I've been watching what Davey had done. He's got a little bit of that wild man energy about him, so it's going to be a buzz and a proper good one. You may remember Cookie when we did a Zoom on Steve's channel. And we had a laugh that evening as well. So Cookie's going to be telling some of his story in the context of Davey's. And there's actually going to be a book coming out that both these guys are going to be putting together. So we've got that look to look forward to as well. And huge thank you to Steve Rafe again for arranging this, you know, with everything going on in your life right now. Really appreciated. Much love and respect. So we're going to go straight over to Davey then.
All right.
And thanks for doing this, Davey.
Yeah.
Where were you born and what was it like growing up for you originally?
West End, Newcastle, Noble Street.
And how was your childhood?
Crime.
How so?
7 years old, 9 years old.
Wow.
I was put into secure care when I was 9 for robbing. And then I went to Acres Special Unit for child murderers because I kept escaping.
You went to ACAT unit for how many murders?
No, not for murders. Child killers place where they put child killers that kill when the children.
So he tried to escape from a child home?
Gotcha, child killers.
Where they put the child killers that have killed people and the only children.
Yeah,
the mixtures were them.
Right. Wow. So when did you two first come to know each other?
It was 1990 or 1991.
That's right, aye. Aye, well, what happened was, I'd been mixed up in crime loads. By the time I'd met Davey, I was well on the path to being a criminal. And I had started drinking in a pub in the West End of Newcastle. And by this time, Davey had been locked up for 6 years for assaulting a police officer. So he hadn't been on the street for quite a while. And this psychopath, and I mean psychopath, started a fight in a pub with me dad over him chatting up me mum.
Yeah.
You know, well, this kid, I mean, nobody in the West End of Newcastle at the time would fight this laddie, you know. And I was like sat in the bar with all the lads, you know, watching this bloke set about me dad. So I jumps up, run away, boots this bloke straight in the head, knocks him clean. Everybody jumps up, gets rid of me out the bar, helps me parents get out the bar. And then this bloke started chasing us about the street with machetes and stuff and that, you know. And that's when I first started carrying weapons on the street, bottles of ammonia, big bayonets, stuff like that. Then Davey got out of jail, heard about me because I'd been burgling, I'd been towing cars for fun. And he says, I'll sort it out for you. Went along, seen the psychopath because Davey, I was the only one mad enough really to fight him 3 times. And sorted it out for us, and I never got any hassle at all off him since, and that's how me and Davey met.
Paddy Conroy's relative.
What was the situation, Davey, that led to the police having a charge on you for assaulting a cop?
I was wanted for the shooting on Colin Llewellyn.
Sorry?
A shooting.
A shooting?
He was wanted for a shooting.
I fired a shot at his house after a beers and a fight. I was 16. He was 30-odd, 20-odd, 30. Beat us 3 times. So I went back with a shotgun, fired it at his house. And they wanted us for that. Why, at the Rock Public House in Critters Park, me and my brother and the little mini pulled out and a police car come when I used to jump out the cars at 30 miles an hour. And run as fast as I could.
Oh, shit.
And just leave them in the car.
Oh, my God.
So I jumps out, runs round the block of the flats, and I'm in the flats and I'm holding the door with this busy pushing the door. So I said, I'm going to have to do this, cunt. So I pulled the door and he fell in. I just got his radio and gimmick, gouged his eye. He got 6 years. 7 years first and a year knocked off on variation.
So how old were you when you went into the prison?
15.
15.
Well, 14, 13, detention centre.
How did you find that?
Loved it. Well, after all I knew, care home,
yeah.
I loved it.
So did you know a lot of people in there already?
No, I knew some, the Newcastle lads, and the ones that knew me dad. So I got on quite well.
Yeah.
Davey's dad was a very, very, very well-respected villain in Newcastle.
Do you want to give us the backstory on Davey's dad?
He's just a well-likeable rogue. Everyone had respect for him.
Well, Big Davey, that's right.
Big Davey.
Big Davey, that's what.
He was 30-odd stone.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. But he could run. He used to race him in 100 yards.
Aye, Big Davey. Yeah. Well, Paddy was a bit of, was like big, your dad's sidekick at one time, wasn't he? So Paddy used to run a boot for your dad.
Was that how Paddy came into Davey's life?
No, Paddy was with me mum's sister.
Your mum's sister?
Since I was about 7 or 9 years old, he's been with me mum's sister.
So was he like an uncle to you?
He was, aye.
Yeah. And you liked him?
I didn't like him.
No.
In the beginning, you didn't like him?
I didn't like him at all at any time. Bullies.
He was a bully?
Bully.
And who was he bullying?
Anyone he could get away with. He'd take liberties. Think he was a big man. Fighting people with their names.
If you had a bit of money, he'd look for any excuse to
extort you.
Mm-hmm.
And how was he getting away with that then? Was he a lone wolf or was he part of a crew?
A big family.
Oh, big family.
So the family were known where you grew up?
Paddy wasn't a fighter, the family, the other brother was a fighter.
His brother?
Big Michael, aye.
Big Michael was Paddy's brother.
Younger brother.
Younger brother. And he had the biggest reputation, did he?
For fighting.
For fighting.
Yes. For fighting, aye.
And were these like, were they like an armed robber crew as well?
No. They were up the villainy, drugs and that. But they never done armed robberies.
So it was like bar fights and...
Busy fights, innit?
Local beefs. Fighting the cops.
Aye.
How many siblings did Paddy have?
Four brothers, 5 brothers, and 3 sisters.
Mm-hmm.
4 sisters.
And did they all end up getting into crime and going to prison?
No.
Well, they were a big family, a fierce reputation. It was mostly through that arm, wasn't it? Big Lenny.
Oh, Lenny. Oh, Lenny was a character.
Aye. He had a fighting reputation on Scotchwood Road, and that's where he... Because it was like loads of pubs on Scotchwood Road. And on Scotchwood Road at that time, through the 60s and the 70s, you know, whoever was like the hardest, could fight the hardest on Scotchwood Road was considered the hardest man in the town, you know. And that's where all the fighting used to happen on Scotchwood Road. You know, so, and that's where the Conroy name first come up, like, in the 60s, with Lenny and Billy, his brother. You know, and they were good blokes.
And were there other families who were rivals of the Conroys?
Not then.
Not then, this is the 60s and 70s, when they're getting established.
It was the 80s and 90s that happened.
Mm-hmm. So they ruled the neighbourhood?
No, well, it was the Glovers, Big Davy.
My dad run Bunbury Road.
Run Bunbury Road, Benwell, Elzick, Old Benwell.
Well, the drugs and that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So talk us through the first day you met Paddy.
I was a child.
Yeah.
I'd just done a burglary. And I sold him the stuff. And after that, he bought the stuff off us every time until his brother took a sheepskin coat off me mate. And his other brother, God bless him, he's dead now, kidnapped me other mate and told them not to graft with us because they wanted us to graft with them. Because I was making good money.
How did he get kidnapped?
Who?
Did you say he got kidnapped?
Not him.
No.
His friend.
Your pal.
Me pal.
Your pal.
They took the HTD off the car when we parked in the back lane to sell some stuff to Jimmy. And when we went in, we come out and we tried to start it and they come running through the back lane. So we just rolled down the back lane. Straight on the main road, across the grass, and it wouldn't get any further, they caught me. So they kidnapped him, tortured him a bit.
Tortured him? How so?
They just threatened him with a crossbow in there.
Oh. Strong.
So he was a bit fearful and knocking around with us after that. But I've dealt with the Conroy since I was a kid, all my life, and Paddy's just a villain. He always has been, always will be.
So during your time in prison then, you said it was easy for you, you liked it.
No, the last bit wasn't. Okay. The last sentence, when I had the children to care for, that killed us.
How old were you then?
26.
So that's almost a decade after this first one.
But
this first one then, what kind of stuff did you experience or see inside the prison?
Everything. I fell off the roof of Franklin, stopped breathing. That had to bring us back to life.
What happened to Franklin? How did that start?
Yeah, how did you get on the roof?
Dominic Noonan got us on the walkway roof and sent me up the helicopter wire, pulled the helicopter wire down, and said if it hold Joe away, because I was 17 stone, it hold all of it, so I went up first, and then I fell off 2 days later, shouting at the screws. I stopped breathing. That was all in the papers. Because I shouldn't have been there because I was a YP in Franklin. I was 18 when they started us up and sent us to Franklin. Because Castleton couldn't be now with us.
Mm-hmm. What were the guards like back then? Were they like ex-military style people?
Ex-army, ex-pitmen. Some hardens, some ones I could have a fight. There were some decent ones, but I never tend to get on with them until later years when the putters were me dad, when he got the 7'6", 7'8" for 30 kilo. The putters with them in Durham, and that's when I learned how to manipulate screws and busies and that.
How would you manipulate them?
Just give them a taster.
What's that?
Keep the wing under control. Mm. Hand out knifing, hand out phoning. Get all your videos. And that's what me dad learned, is to manipulate them. Because before that, I'd rather just punch them. I wouldn't hesitate to punch a screw. And they knew it.
So what was the battles like in Durham with the screws?
Not much so Durham, because they say I had over familiarity with the screws. That's why they wouldn't send us back there. They sent me to Franklin. They sent Paddy back to Durham. But they sent me to Franklin in the Seg when I was up the trail. And I had my fair share of battles with them there.
So they send a lot of men in on you?
Tied us up.
Tied you up.
Stripped us. Assaulted us. The worst one was Belmarsh from Birmingham.
What happened there?
I just lost my head.
Did something trigger that?
Drugs. Was a drug-induced psychosis.
What drug was it?
Cocaine.
Cocaine, okay.
All of a sudden, having any amount of it every day and then getting cut off. We're being a double high-risk cat here. I couldn't handle it. I lost my head, tried to kill myself. Ripped loads of people. But I tried to help this. And just couldn't understand the situation I was in. I couldn't understand the surroundings. I thought everyone was setting us up. I thought the screws were. I used to wet the mattress on night time because I thought the screws were going to set a fire and kill it in the cell.
Wow.
And they used to do things to provoke us in and out the strip cell. Pause in the strip cell, an hour later, I come out, back out and start again. Mm-hmm. But the older I got, I just lost interest for violence when they put us on that injection.
What's it called, that thing that they give you?
Depo. The pixel.
How's that feel?
I've had no violent urges since I've been on it.
This is good.
Well, I used to think of violence all the time. Mm. At one stage. And I thought violence was the answer to everything. If you couldn't get something done, you use violence or you use your body language to get it. Now I talk about things and I listen and I act different. There's no violence left in it.
Does that change your life?
With the kids it has.
Good.
How many kids you got?
Four.
Wow. Been busy.
Not one of them's a criminal.
Wow.
Not smoke, no drugs.
Do you think seeing their life has influenced
one of them's a barrister.
Barrister?
Aye, the winger.
Bloody hell, they're doing well.
So tell us more about the attempted escapes.
There was one in the 80s when I come from Lower Newton. They used to take you on the trip bus. 30 years to Crown Court. Drop you off at different courts. I got handcuffed to Peter Furr away. And I was in the cell room, so I had the shampoo in a Mars bar packet to slip the cuff. He said, it's not going to come off. I said, it is coming off. He was supposed to stand with a blade and hold the screws while I popped the window with a handcuff still dangling. He jumps out the window when I pops it and runs.
Oh, shit.
Then jump on me, pull me pants off, pull me top off. I run down the high street with these clothes on. And that woman that was in the journal the next day, the paper, said, you come past me, and there's a stitch on, jumped over that wall.
Was that the only time you tried to escape?
No, there was another one in Durham when they were taking us to court. They slipped the cuff again, I just took off. But it was my luck, it was a marathon runner, Robson, the screw. And every time I turned around and chased him, he was running away. And then turned him back when I was turned the other way, running. So I just gave up.
There was an infamous one on the Felon Bypass as well with Paddy Conroy.
What happened there?
Paddy asked us to organise an escape, so I said, aye. Got people to sort it. And I didn't think it was gonna come off. But we'll come past you with roundabout. And the bus was still travelling 50 miles an hour. But there was a hole in the mesh between the driver and the back. And I was handcuffed to the screw. So I punched the screw, knocked him, who got 6 months for that. And pulled the handbrake on through this gap. And the bus has done a turn and went between the Range Rover that was waiting for us and a BMW that was waiting for us.
Oh, my God.
As though it was meant to be. And I've just went, they've got guns, you better let it out. Give the property and the private cash as well. I took all the fines and everything they had on me.
They changed prison policy because of that.
And then we went to Blackpool, didn't we?
We did, aye. We had a good time in Blackpool.
What did you get up to?
Oh, alleged things.
What happens in Blackpool stays in Blackpool.
We did rob it, didn't we? We did rob the place, silly we did.
Jewellery shops, everything. Mm-hmm.
Allegedly.
We loved the Comets. The Comet stores, them big Comet stores. You could break into them dead easy, you know, through the false ceilings, isn't it, David?
Yeah. So what's the consequences in the UK system then if you do an attempted escape or an escape? Do they add more time on?
It depends if it's armed. If it's armed, you get a good whack.
Good beating.
But if it's just an escape, you get 6 months. The governor normally deals with it.
What the hell? It's nothing, is it?
You get about...
In stripes.
In 28 days in CC.
Which means what?
Solitary confinement.
Solitary confinement. You just got a concrete bed, haven't you? Just put 6 inches off the floor and they give you like a zoot suit thing that you can't rip.
Green and yellow.
And a toilet roll and a paper potty.
Do you get fed well?
No, not.
The poor things in your food as well.
Why?
They say it's just salt, but I've seen them do some awful things to my food.
Glass.
I wouldn't if it was glass, but I've tasted some funny things in my food. Oh. I still had it.
Do never do come down with me with Davy Glover.
I still have it.
So while Davy then, Cookie, was going in and out of the system in his late teens and in his 20s, what was your life like? Were you going in and out of the system?
No, I was, because like I'm like 6-7 years younger than Davy. You know, I when he was in and out of the jail, Dean, he's 6 and stuff and that, I started off just with petty crime, really, and stealing car radios, just anything I could rob for sweets and money and all that, you know. But by the time I'd met Davey, I was a well-accomplished car thief. I was a good burglar and not house burglary, even though I did do some house burglaries, but it was mainly shop burglaries that I'd done, you know. And if we did D houses, we like to travel out what area to burgle. Well, I always like to try and burgle houses where we could. I'm not going to say what we could find in some of the houses. But that's, yeah.
Expensive belongings.
No, we would look for.
He's on about accessories that go like that.
Aye. Because that's how we got them back then, you see. A lot of them. But, yeah, I was well accomplished by the time me and Davey met up, you know. And it just got better. I felt like a pure outlaw.
What were you spending your money on?
Knighthood.
We weren't on drugs. We weren't taking drugs. We smoked cannabis. That was it. We never drank. We did drink occasionally. But
I bought cars. And
mm-hmm. Bought cars and just had fun on the streets. Sometimes we'd pay the kids to brick the busies and stuff like that in the middle of the night and just have fun on the streets. I mean, we'd have money, pocket full of money, plenty of money, and we'd still be out committing crime just for the sake of committing crime to get better at it. That was my motive for committing crime, to get good.
Any crime? Mm-hmm. We'd done anything.
So you almost chose a career in crime?
Oh, I did, aye. I did choose it. Well, I left school, I couldn't read or out. You know, by then I had earned a little bit of money stealing the teachers' handbags at schools and, you know, burgling and stealing cars and...
As you guys were rising up in the crime world then, was there other big figures that you started to associate with or other big figures that you heard about that you looked up to?
Well, I dealt with them, Stephen, never. I dealt, like, I had drinks with the Sears. I was talking to them. I used to talk to Paddy. I used to talk, just because I knew most of the villains through me dad.
Well, I looked up to Big Davey.
Most of the villains knew me dad, and so I automatically got on with them.
You're well protected.
Oh, I was well looked after.
Oh, he could protect himself, believe he didn't need it. Couldn't you, Davey?
I was crazy.
None of them wanted out to deal with Davey, like.
I was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your first encounter with Paddy?
My first encounter, I got dragged into his sitting room. Because his house got raided. Because I used to, my pal used to clean the dog, used to look after his dogs, his Rottweilers. You know, because he used to let his Rottweilers loose on the street and terrorise all the neighbours, Paddy did. Well, my pal used to walk them dogs and keep the yard clean. So I used to sit on the wall and watch him date, and I was terrified of these dogs. And his house got raided, and Paddy had stashed an ounce of weed, an ounce of tack, in his skip outside. So when he got out of the busy station and all that, he went looking for his tack, couldn't find it. So me and the dog walker got pulled into Paddy's living room, and Paddy's big, huge, scary man, and I'm looking up at him and he's saying, "Where's my dope? Does your dad smoke dope, does he?" And I didn't even know what dope is. You know, I haven't got a clue. But that was the first time I met Paddy Conroy. And the last time I met him, before I got locked up for my index offence, he turned around and says to this. Because it was the hat I wore, he wanted this to, how can I say this? He wanted us to watch his back in the car, in the pub, and just sit in the corner of the pub with a gun. And I looked at Davey, And Davy knew that I wasn't up for it. And Davy says, no, I'll just leave him. And then Paddy turned on and said, you do everything he tells you to do. Doesn't matter what it is, you've got to do it. Because you're going to do it anyways, so do it. And that was the last words he said to us.
Now, the Harrow War is interesting because it's a family called the Harrisons in Newcastle. And Davy has listened to a lot of Paddy's podcasts where he maintains that this war between the Conroy family and the Harrisons was started because of a fire, which he claims that the Harrisons caused. But Davy has the truth behind that. It wasn't caused by a fire, Davy, was
it? No, 2 16-year-olds having a fight, straight fight. One the Harrisons, one the Conroys, Ricky Conroy.
It's like the traditional family feud then.
And then the Paddy stepped in, so the Harris stepped in, and that's when it started.
And what damage was done from that feud over the years?
Shootings, petrol bombs.
Anyone get killed?
No.
No.
People did get seriously injured.
Some died, but wasn't over that feud. It was the offsprings of that feud. Other people getting involved and
got themselves hurt.
Aye.
And what were you making of the feud, Cookie?
Well, I was just a young'un at the time, so I was kind of terrified about the whole situation. And I've got to say, Suicide Square was like a naughty place to go, and out of all the families, they're the only family who ever gave us like bad nightmares when I was a young'un, you know, because I used to suffer from bad nightmares. And one time I jumped through a plain glass window in the middle of the night thinking I was getting attacked by the Harris. So that's how bad they were, but they're good people. You know, they're good people.
Were there any attempts to kidnap or attack you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were.
What? Could you describe them?
Well, I got kidnapped off Paddy for the bar.
Mm-hmm. And what was the reason for that?
Because I screwed his bar.
What?
We took his bar. We scalped his bar. And he was dead sly, but the way he kidnapped us, me and my pal, and because he waited, and Davy went to prison and then got with. And he took with to. And I always remember, I was scared, but because this other bloke was in the car with us, with Paddy, I knew he wasn't going to, I knew this bloke wouldn't let Paddy seriously hurt us.
So how did he get you in the car?
Just grabbed. Was nice to us, was really nice to us, as if it was me pal and all that. Got us in the car and then turned on us and slapped us straight in the face. And I was like, whoa, you seen your little cunt, you burgled my bar. And you know, you look at the McIntyre video, how fat Paddy's eating, how scary he looks. He looked even scarier back then, you know. So then I got took to his house in North Bourne Street, top of North Bourne Street, with me pal. And he had me sat in the chair, slapping his, shooting and barling at us. And it wasn't until, like, they were beating up me pal and that, and got the chainsaw out. And I was like, that's when I admitted to the bar, and because I couldn't face me pal getting battered.
So we got a chainsaw out, you said?
I got a chainsaw out, Not Paddy, mind you. The two people who had me pal. Because there was Paddy and his pal who got a hat of me in the Jeep, right? And then there was two of Paddy's pals who got a hat of my pal and took with the Paddy's. And then the two who was battering my pal, and because he wouldn't see him out, they got the chainsaw out, and they were going to... I don't think they would have cut him with it, like, you know, but I was just a young'un at the time, so I wasn't sure what was going on. I had a bloody nose. I was getting slapped the boot off Paddy, and me pal was going to get seriously hurt. And I thought, I'll just tell him I burgled it. What's he going to do? And he says, you've got 3 days to go and get me, what was it? I think it was $8,000 he asked us for. And I thought, where am I going to get that, man? I'm going to do a robbery or something like that. But Davey got out a week later and never heard another thing about it.
They got away with 3,500, didn't you, I think? And Davey said to me, he says, that's the only time he ever got paid off, Conroy.
That's right. Aye. The only time he ever got paid off, earned any money with a paddy, was when he robbed him.
So you were under threat and Davey stepped in and stopped the threat, is that what you're saying?
Soon as Davey got out of jail, didn't have to pay any money, he stopped everything and he says, don't worry about it, Stephen, I'll sort this out.
That was automatic as soon as Davey got out of jail, or did Davey have a word with him?
No,
just stopped straight away.
Just, he pulled me with Fred the head and said, are you going to pay the money back? I went, aye. I'm in a baby.
So he must have been quite scared of him.
Yes, he was terrified at Davey.
When you were robbing that place, were you aware it could end in a situation like that?
No, because I didn't think we would get caught. You know, I was thinking, it's Paddy's ball and I could end up getting battered and all that by doing this. But I didn't think I would get caught. But I know how grassed were up now. I didn't know how grassed were up. Aye.
Was it a friend or associate?
No, it was someone. Well, I'd put the damp on someone's house and that person told a relative who knew Paddy, who then told Paddy, another villain, he battered him, Davey, that's why he grassed on me. He battered him at the back of the green tree. Come in the green tree, shooting, where's Davey Glover? He thinks he's a hard man. He was lifting the heaviest weight in Scotchy at the time and everybody was scared of him because he could have a shot. And Davey says, I'm here. I'll come round with you. And Davey went round with him. Within
two minutes,
he was screaming. What you done to this? And Davey had battered the living daylights with him.
His eye came out.
Mm-hmm.
Nearly.
Bloody hell.
Mm-hmm.
So when Davey got out of prison this time then, what was life like for the two of you? Were you buzzing because your best mate was out and...
Well, I was locked up for a life sentence.
He was locked up, most of it.
For okay.
Life sentence.
What led to that?
Someone called me, a grass or cookie.
Went off me head.
Killed him. Should never happened.
At that point I had committed a lot of crime. I was well and truly accustomed to committing crime. But to commit that kind of crime, I was not prepared for the psychological stuff that come along with it. It was horrible, horrible. I felt like a monster. I felt ill.
Are we able to talk
about
it?
And then they put us in a... I meant to look after us and they didn't. They locked us up with serial killers and all sorts of shit.
So what year was this and how old were you?
1994 and I was just turned 21.
21, 1994. And you going into the highest category prison because of the nature of the crime?
The provisionally cut aiders, right, and they put us in Durham Jail Hospital. Then after about 3-4 months, they took us off provisional cat here, and that's when I started mixing with like Dennis Nielsen, Myra Henley and Rose West, 4 dampers doing from us. It was a complete nightmare. I mean, Dennis Nielsen become me pal. Didn't even know who he was because I'm only 21. What do I know about serial killers?
He's a very articulate bloke.
Oh, he was all right, Desi. He was canny.
Do you think he was attracted to you?
He might have been attracted. I ticked all his boxes, but he was ticking my boxes because he come across like he knew the score, with the screws, how to manipulate the screws, how to manipulate the system. And I was obsessed with trying to escape and stuff like that. And well, I didn't know who he was, you know. And I didn't think he would have tried out on with us. He might have fancied us. Not bothered.
Was this the period of time when you were still on remand in the beginning? Oh. What are they telling you facing for that?
See that again,
what
Sean?
Sentence were they saying your lawyer was saying you were facing?
Life sentence.
Life.
Life sentence.
So you knew from the get-go before any trials or anything?
Oh, aye. Yeah. I knew I was going to jail. It was no ifs or buts about that, like.
And what does life mean? What did it mean in the system at that point?
Well, it gave you 99 years in prison.
It's just IPP, is it like that?
It's like that, and then you're given it a tariff afterwards. Mine was set at 12 years by the judge, then up to 14 by the home secretary, and I done 18, 17 and a half, and got out, went back in on a recall for growing cannabis for 2.5 years. Right.
What was your trial like?
It was a nightmare. It was not facing my victim's family and stuff.
Oh, God.
Sean, honestly, it was the worst thing. It was the most hardest thing I ever done in my life.
Were you, when you committed this crime then, were you on any substances or alcohol or anything?
No, I'd had a couple of pints of lager and that was it. No, I was, you got to understand, I was totally and utterly criminalised back then. I was extremely violent because of what had been going on the streets. And because Davey and that had been locked up, I was on my own, so my social structure had totally changed, and that just made me lash out violently. So anybody who started anything with us back then, I would have looked to stab them straight away, squirt them with ammonia, and if I needed a gun, get a gun and shoot them. I'm disgusted to see all that, because I'm totally ashamed of that behaviour, especially because of what it led me. And that's,
are we able to talk about the night of the crime?
No, I would not like to talk about that, because it's a very sensitive situation, and you know, I didn't really enjoy doing it. I did it because I want to bring awareness to this, you know, so that's why I talk about it, willing to talk about it.
So go on then, so you're in this trial, and how long is the trial?
About a week.
About just a week.
Just a week.
Do you think you've got a prayer of beating it, or do you think you're going down?
No, I know I'm going down. I wanted to plead guilty. That's what I wanted to do, but my barrister at the time turned around and says, Stephen, it's the Crown like to have a trial around these kinds of cases because they want all the facts to come out in open court so that the victim's family understand what went down.
Show justice has been done, good closure, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what about the jury members? What were they like?
They seemed all right. I was just totally criminalised, you know.
Yeah.
As soon as I opened my mouth, it was just criminal. You know, and I admitted that it didn't dock and that, you know. So
it's a horrible situation to be in where you see something the normal person wouldn't even take it in, but a criminal looks at everything to earn. And if someone comes along and you can earn, you take the opportunity. And he was just a criminal till he got caught up with me and we got involved in guns and that. Allegedly.
This podcast is sponsored by Harry's. Harry's is way more than a super sharp razor company. They're here to revamp your whole routine, from close shaves and flake-free hair, all the way to clear, healthy skin. Harry's helps guys feel great. For this sponsorship, Harry's is offering a free travel-sized shower gel with a trial set to you, the viewers, to give you a chance to try their other products as well as shave. Please make sure to support this podcast and give your own shower shave a go by redeeming a free Harry's trial set. All you cover is £3.95 for delivery. Just head to harrys.com/Sean, S-H-A-U-N, to have your set delivered and start a shave plan. Your freebie will be added at checkout. That's harrys.com/Shaun, S-H-A-U-N. Thank you for supporting Harry's. Link is in the description box below this video.
And then that's what led him to suffer that lumpy thing.
How did it feel going back to your cell then after you were sentenced?
A relief.
Because you knew what the conclusion of it, what the proceedings was.
I was glad to get left off. I was, my barrister turned around and said, "You look happy. You look like there's a big, huge weight just being brought off your shoulders, lifted off your shoulders." And I was buzzing. I was happy to go back to Durham Prison and with the serial killers.
Get back with Des.
Desi was waiting.
Get back with this, the aye.
Were you in a cell on your own?
No, with Desi.
Well, yeah, I did get padded up with Desi for one night.
You did?
For one night.
You really was shared a cell with Dennis Nielsen.
So play cards or?
Did you know at that point what he'd done?
No. I knew we had killed, been, was a murderer and that. Yeah. But I'd committed the same offence and stuff. You know, but I didn't have a clue that he had.
People killed, under the floorboards.
Aye. All these people and all that.
And the way he like narrates it in that like Mr. Man cartoon voice. Mm-hmm. Woke up in the morning, I picked up the floorboards and there was mm-hmm. too many corpses there to put anyone else under that day.
Yeah.
So what was that like then, the night with him? Was your sleep uninterrupted?
No, he didn't bother us. Done everything I asked him to do, to tell you the truth. No, it's a big story, man, how we ended up padded up with Dennis Nielsen.
Oh, please tell us.
Yeah.
Well, I'd been obsessed with escaping, hadn't I? Right? So, Des is on the ward, and he's got like, it's like, everybody knows him on the ward, and what have you, he's got friends there and stuff. And he says to us, "I know where you can escape." And I says, "How's that?" He says, "Get yourself sectioned to a mental hospital, right? And you'll be able to escape from there. It'd be much easier for you to escape." So I goes, "All right, well, how do I do this?" He says, "Well, cut yourself." So, well, I'm not really into cutting myself and stuff and what have you now. So for weeks I'm trying to build up the courage to cut myself, and I couldn't do it. So I says to Desi, "That's not working for me. I can't cut myself, yeah?" He says, "Well, you know, a few of the lads there, they're wanting sectioned." He says, "And they want me to cut them. You know, one of the reasons why I didn't cut myself in that was because I wasn't sure that they would definitely section me and I'd be able to escape. And Desi says, "Well, I'll prove it to you." So, cut one lad, he got sectioned. Cut another lad, he got sectioned. I think he cut three all in all. And then within 6-7 weeks, I turned and said to Marty, "Then Desi, you're going to have to cut me so I can get out." And he says, "Well, I'm going to have to get padded up with you because you can't do it on this ward. They'll know that it's a con." So he got the nurse to pad us up. We're together. That. 2 nights I was with Desi. The first night, he cut us on my arm there. I went and the nurse doctor stitched us up in the anaesthetic on out my numb and thought it was like to teach us a lesson. And then the second night, because Desi says, it's because there's been too many slashings. That's why they won't section you. Well, to me, it was all just a bit of graft to get out of jail, me, you know. So I says, "All right, then, Desi, you're going to have to cut me throat." So I says, "Go on, get the razor. I lay down on the bed." I says, "Go on." Boom, cut me throat. Rung the bell. I was sectioned that night.
Oh,
no. Sectioned, and then I escaped. 3 months later, I escaped. Was with a couple of days.
How did you actually escape from the building, whatever building they put you in?
Sentenced to St. Luke's Hospital in Middlesbrough. and there was just crappy reinforced windows and that, and I just booted it open and climbed up onto the roof, because it was all wire fences, like the prison runned it, but I could get up onto the roof. Ran across the roofs, I thought I was Mac Vick and everything. I did. I really did. It was crusty. And I took off. Heard the helicopter come. I hid in it. Found a shed that I could lock from the inside. Hidden there for 24 hours. Come out, tore the car with a 3-inch nail. Got all the way to the gate, said, conked through the... Petrol in Gateshead and got a lift off someone from Gateshead who knew I had escaped, been watching us on the telly, and says, yeah, I'll help you, cookie. Get in the car, I'll drop you off.
They were supporting you.
I dropped us off over the West End, and I was back in the West End. The police were getting to people's doors because they thought I had escaped, because they thought I was going to shoot
somebody. When I got arrested after the escape with Conway, I got nicked with Cookie. One Middlesbrough.
Aye, throwing vans.
Throwing vans. And they come on top of me and I bodged me way out and he got nicked. I got away and then they surrounded the area as soon as I knew who he was and who he was linked to. And they caught me a half an hour later. I give a false name.
So how long have you been out before you got caught?
Oh, I'd only been out a few days. I didn't know how, but the police knew I was in this flat and I was waiting. I was on my way up to Scotland. I'm glad that I got caught, to tell you the truth, because I would have just been encouraged to maybe commit other serious acts of violence and stuff and that. And I don't think I would have been up for it because the amount of remorse that I felt after I committed my index offence was unreal. And I stopped us from committing further violence, that's for sure.
So they caught you and dragged you back?
What was your reception like?
Scrooge didn't like us. Give us 28 days CC and hide us in patches for 12 months. And just give us an out, really. It's a Durham regime. Get an out and plenty of it.
So what was your routine like?
There were just, I'd be in a single damp all the time. I'd have to take my clothes off every night and give them to the prison officer. I kind of call them screws because they're all human beings. And that's what I'd have to do every night. Well, the wood letters mix, because I was in the hospital with the serial killers, and the wood letters mix on association time. So that was it. Well, I was on bang up the rest of the time.
So other high-profile killers you were with this time?
Seeing that, when I got back, Desi had gone, because his high court judgment had just come in as well. He was going to do natural life or not. So he was gone. But there was... Because Moira was still there. Rose had left, because Moira and Rose didn't get on. Moira hated Rose, and because I got a couple of tabs off Moira, because you know when he'd been in such a state, I'd go on to the listener's damper and sit on a Sunday and talk to the listener. Well, Moira would use the phone at the top of the landing every Sunday afternoon, and she's just heard me talking. I need a tab, he's done in, and she's walking by, and she's like, I'll give you a tab, Kurt, she has a tab for him. Aye, and...
Was Fred still there?
No, Fred wasn't there.
Fred, no.
He hung himself before this.
After he killed himself in Birmingham, after Charlie pulled his leg off him in the recess, Charlie Bronson pulled his wooden leg off him in the recess at Birmingham. And then he hanged his cell, and then they put me in Fred West's cell that he hanged his cell in.
Well, that's what they done with me on my murder trial, because on my murder trial they put me in Moira Hinley's old damper,
So what's the women, men's going in the women's? How's that work?
Well, on a hospital landing, there's like...
So they're mixed?
It's like an L. No, no, it's like an L like that. So you've got dampers coming down that way, which are the single dampers. And then you've got double dampers doing that aisle, doing that spur, you know. And halfway doing the spur, they had partitioned the door off. So they would lock that off during the day with Moira and Rose on the other side. And on any time, they'd open it up. So it was just one landing. And like, and them hospital dampers, you got like the windows on the door, like, or big windows, you know, they're kind of square like that, with just bars on, so you can put your mirror out and look down the landing. And I used to watch the telly and stuff. There was a telly on the landing, and it was creepy. It was a creepy, horrible atmosphere on that when it opened that door in the night time. It really, really was. I got terrible nightmares because of it. I used to jump up the mill and he'd think I'm seeing dead bodies, kick the door screaming, let us out, let us out, let us out. I went free through with that. Mm-hmm.
Because of the nature of their crimes, the females, how were they treated?
Well, Moira used to send food up to Moira. She'd never eat food. She only ever ate canteen food, Moira Henley. And because the prison officer, the SO, used to, I was trying to give me Moira's food. And I'd go, I'm not eating that. And it was lovely cheese and all. And I was thinking, oh, it's a better die than our kids. So I was tempted to eat her food, but I knew that the likelihood the lads would have done something to it, you know. But but that was like the... When I landed in Durham Hospital, it was the first time I'd ever heard of Moira Henley and Ian Breedy. You know, So I didn't have that emotional maturity to really understand what these people were about. I just got the horrible, creepy feeling that just was part of Durham Jail Hospital with them people in it.
So, Davey, what was Charles Bronson like then? When did you first bump into him?
I bumped into Charlie through Mickey Waite, a lifer, in Long Norton, in the library. He said, I want you to meet someone. Charlie wanted to meet us, so I shook his hand and just been a supporter of his ever since.
He said he was lovely.
Gentleman, Charlie.
Mm.
And then I was in Franklin and Full Sutton with him.
He speaks very highly of Davey as well. I mean, obviously, I keep in touch with Charlie on a regular basis, week-to-week basis, and every time I speak to him, he'll often ask about different characters. And the two people he mentions the most are Fred the Head and Davey Glover. And he says he had the utmost respect for both of them, you know.
I've got the most respect for Charlie. It's a shame what's happened to him. Just a character.
Mm-hmm.
He's never killed anyone. He's never really hurt anyone badly.
Mm-hmm.
And he's never been it.
And it does beg the question whether Charlie has found his own rehabilitation in prison. And I really do believe he has, because he has been kept in isolation, because he has been kept from the mainstream prisoners and the high-profile criminals, not like Reggie Cray, who had to mix with them all and had no chance at all if reform... And I think Charlie's had psychologists, he's had... The only people who I think are around Charlie at the minute are professional people, or prison officers. And I think he's had positive relationships around him for a long time now. And I think he has rationalised things, he has got that focus where he has emotionally connected with rehabilitation and not reoffending. I do not believe this man is dangerous, especially at 70 years of age now.
70, let him
70
on
years
that.
Of age.
What a waste of taxpayers' money, keeping.
Yeah, absolutely.
What a waste.
Yeah.
He shouldn't be in there.
There's worse cases that they're let out. Child killers and that, and people like that, and then they keep a man like that in there for being a character.
It's upside down.
It is upside down.
It's how you're upset. It's all about money, Sean.
Yes, it's a business.
When he done that £1 million damage on Broadmoor roof, he wasn't getting away without.
That's right.
How did the beef between Charlie and Fred West start then? You said he took his leg. How did that begin?
Charlie was walking through the land on the cat ear wing at Birmingham, and Fred was in the recess emptying his bucket, and Charlie ran in and tried to take his leg off him
and hit him with it. And hit him with it.
Brilliant.
And what do you know? How Fred reacted to that?
I wasn't there. I just got told after I went there.
Yeah,
he killed himself after later that day.
I killed himself.
Was it the same day?
Aye.
Yeah.
Didn't he write on his wall something like "You'll never forget me, Fred" or something like that?
There was all sorts of mad things he wrote on them walls. I went in his cell after because he was catty. I went in his cell after him, the screws were in his up.
Was it eerie?
Aye. I got to do it as quick as possible.
What high profile killers did you come across in the prison system?
All of them. All of them. Mad Fry High, hiding in the bus in the 70s. In London, Palestinian, 40-odd year prison. He's just been released. Peter, there was loads of them.
The Ripper, Sutcliffe.
I never come across a Ripper.
Peter Tobin,
aye.
What was Peter Tobin's crime?
He was a murderer, wasn't he? Murdered women.
Mm. Barnsley Beast.
The Barnsley Beast.
I've seen him go in the shower and five of them going in to beat him up and they've all come out with lumps and bumps on their head.
Really?
Yeah.
The hell?
He was built like a brick shit.
Was he? What did the Barnsley Beast... I mean, I can imagine, but...
He used to get the woman and... from behind and raped him.
Oh, shit.
And Barnsley.
Oh, my God.
He was in Hull at first, now I met him in Long Larton.
Who do you think's the most dangerous person you ever came across?
A little kid called Tony Steele.
Tony Steele?
Little Cockney kid. Used to press the bell for the screws to run for the riot and stab them in the back.
Bloody hell.
He's doing about 3 day sentences now.
Did you get along with him?
Aye, I did. I was in the block a few times with him.
Wow.
What about yourself, Cookie?
I would say Dennis Nielsen's the most violent criminal I've ever met. Like, I mean, I did cross paths with Robert Maudsley a couple of times when I was being tucked down the block, getting nicked in Durham, but I never got to meet him properly, but I could see the hurt. I recognised his pain. It was similar to mine.
I've seen Bob Mosley myself through a glass window when I was going to visit Charlie, and he was passing, and Charlie went, "Oh, there's Bob," and he gave us a wave. But Bob is the man who is in what's called the Silence of the Lambs cell, you know, and he literally is under 24-hour observation.
What did he do?
Well, it's what he's done inside, isn't it? He's
three mates or two. He bashed the head in there and he hit the brain.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
The spoon in the, into the brains.
But now
that was just a story, that though, Sean, I think.
he's now literally like got very long hair. He doesn't cut his nails. He's got long nails. He's hunched back now. But yeah, he's quite a character. Again, Charlie speaks highly of him. But you see, because there's that kind of mentality, isn't it? You spend that time down the block. You're with these people, and he can see the positives in Bob, I guess. But
so is he doing natural life then?
Yeah, he will never get out.
No.
Wow.
What was your most scariest experience in there?
I nearly got raped off coming up a visit.
Holy shit.
In Durham. I had about a good dozen of them runders, and I come out to visit, punching us, trying to get me pants down and stuff and that, trying to make a squat, get me drugs, and somebody who I knew from the West End, not Davey, but somebody who I knew who was a big character in Durham Jail at the time, seen what was going on, come in and stopped them all from doing it and threatened them all. So I was very lucky because they were there. And I think it was about 4 years later, my other pal chopped the kid's hand off, who was the main person who was bullying us and going to rape us.
Wow. That's interesting, because you don't hear about that as much in the UK system as in the US system. Like, in the US system, you have to go to a rape class to get taught how not to get raped. That's how common it is. Mm-hmm. And you wonder, like, in the UK, does it happen? Some people say, I never heard of that. You know, no, it's an American thing.
It happens for drugs.
Over drugs.
No, drugs are kind of up your backside
it's
for drugs.
It's rife now in the prison system.
Do you have any stories of what, you know, happened?
Well, that'll stay between me and you for what?
Because who is it? Delinquent Nation said they would rape them with spoons to get drugs out.
Oh, yeah, that's to get the drugs out.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they've got a package and
that's what they're going to date it is.
I mean, that's still classed as fucking rape, in my opinion.
Oh, still rape, aye.
Yeah, but it's still...
Aye. Our class it as rape, like.
One situation I seen was that the Indian lad getting killed in Long Norton.
Over what?
He wanted to go on an exercise. This young Indian lad wanted to go on exercise, but the boss of the gang wanted him to stay in to cook. And he said, no, I'm going out. He said, I'll kill you. When the office got a cutting knife, met a knife off a screw, come back and stabbed them in the heart, dropped them straight away.
How cheap is life in prison?
Oh, no.
Very cheap. Very cheap. People are beaten to death in Durham. I want a 20 pound canteen.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
How common were suicides?
There's a lot of suicides, like, especially in Durham prison, I know that. You know, because when I went back in on my recall, and I was only there, 8 months or so, and I think there was like 4 suicides. And how I know that is because when the ambulance people would come in, they'd have to load the ambulance up with the suicide victim into the room outside my damper, outside my window. So,
what year was that?
When did I come back? That's 2012.
So on the long one then, did you work your way down the security levels?
Oh, me biggin', aye, I did, aye. I had to, I started off in Durham, Wormwood, and then I went to Wormwood Scrubs, was the first stage life assistant, on the advice of Dennis Nielsen.
He's like your mentor, isn't he?
He was. I didn't have a clue who he was, man. He says, Cookie, get yourself down to Wormwood Scrubs. He says, they'll get you telling you, he'll start to calm down, and then get yourself to Grendon. Because they mentioned Grendon to this. It was Desio mentioned Grendon, and he says, oh, I know the governor there. And I says, oh, will you write him a letter for us? And I ask him if they'll make sure they'll accept this. And
he definitely liked you.
But this is like a headline, isn't it? It's like Dennis slashed my throat. But he was helping me out at the time. He was my mentor.
Well, he helped us escape. I didn't think he wanted to kill us. I don't think he would.
No.
I don't think he...
But to have a serial killer slash your throat, that's a unique thing, isn't it?
It is.
And you must be wondering, with hindsight, what was going through his head to get you to move in with him, and then he's doing these things to you. It's building up, isn't it, where he could. potentially.
Do you think he was getting off on the fact of slashing people? And yeah,
I think he
the
was.
Power thing he was. Aye, aye. Yeah. It was because he had great people skills. He did have great people skills. And he knew how to tick people's boxes for them, you know.
I think I've told you the story before, but Charlie Bronson often tells me it. He says the very first day that Dennis arrived on the landing, after he'd been sentenced for the 16 murders in Muswell Hill and the other address in London, he came in and two guys tried to take his canteen off him. And he says, "I wouldn't do that if I was you." And he goes, and the lads come, "Well, why is that?" And he goes, "Well," he says, the sentence that I've been given," he says, is multiple life sentences." He says, "is for killing young men," and he said, "gay men," and the guys are looking, thinking, get to the point. And he says, "So," he says, "if you were to take my canteen office, then I have some contacts in the media," he says, "who would be very interested in my two new gay lovers inside this prison." Needless to say, these guys never took Dennis Nielsen's canteen. But Charlie loved that. He says, "You know, very clever guy.
Yeah.
Very, very good at manipulating." And he said, you know, heinous crimes that he did, taking all those young boys' lives. Mm. But he said, you know, you could see that the guy was very, very intelligent, you know. Mm. Dangerous, psychopathic.
So that's how he got his victims, at the job centre, wasn't it?
Some of them, yeah, in the pubs. What was it like going down the security levels then?
It was hard work because you find it so hard to address your offending behaviour so you can reduce your risk, right? And then you didn't get the opportunity, did he? Or you know, you're sat in front of these psychologists and you've got, like, no insight into your offending behaviour at all, you know? So, and they're writing reports about you every 3 years saying he's still highly dangerous, still recommend that he stays in closed conditions for the foreseeable future. And it was only until I got to Grendon that I actually got the chance to work on reducing my risk and understanding properly what went on for us. Then I went to CCAT, and CCAT was, it was worse conditions than it was in BCAT, you know. So, because I never went to ACAT prison, cat ear prison out like that. I just stayed in the BCAT, me, you see, so I...
Why, how was she worse? Because was it more squalid or more people to in the areas, or...?
It was more squalid, and it was, there was more violence, more drug use, you know. So I had to keep my boundaries in place all the time because, you know, people say, you know, when you say to people, "I didn't take drugs," you know, and they're going, "Well, he's dodgy if he doesn't take drugs." I'll, you know, we'll watch him and that. And I'd have to say, "No, I didn't take drugs," because it makes us paranoid. It makes us feel violent. It makes us behave. I start selling all me canteen. I start living like a bump, like a tramp. I kind of do that. That's why I don't take drugs. Not because of what you might think. So, and that's how I reinforced my boundaries around drugs in prison, especially in CCAT.
How did you overcome that suspicion on you then? Because you wouldn't do stuff with the fellas, take drugs with the fellas.
Well, that went wrong. We run them, really. So they just trusted us.
They trusted you?
Because, like, you know, now they just carried on doing their business and doing what they're doing, run this, and that went wrong. Didn't come on top or nothing and was all right. So that's how, because the longer you're on the landings with people and that, the more you find out. And it's normally around about the 3 year mark on the landings where you start to really find out what people are about on the landings, you know.
You can't hide anything, can you?
No, you can't. No. Yeah. It comes out in the end. Yeah. It all comes out in the end. Your behaviours do.
So, how far into your sentence were you at this point?
I was over. In CCAT, I was over tariff. So I'd done me 14 years.
14.
I'd done me 14 and I was waiting on a parole hearing. Well, spending 12 months in CCAT, which I ended up spending 3, and then 12 months in DCAT, and I was released. So DCAT was the worst bit.
So in your 30s, you go to DCAT. Why was it the worst bit?
because you had prison officers who were a pain in the arse, who were just on your case constantly terrorising you. They had you terrified to walk on the grass. So all the good work I'd done in Grendon, I had been in the sea cap for 3 years, but I'd managed to keep everything at bay. But it just started to make us more institutionalised, with this where the screws were just truly micromanaging us and dominating us, walking on grass and stuff like that, you know. So I never got any real resettlement in my day cart. I just proved that I wouldn't run away and try and escape from prison and commit crime. And that's all I've done there.
So your routine from the highest security levels then was disrupted when you went to DCAT, was it?
Aye, yeah, it was.
That messed with your head?
It didn't mess with my head, aye. 1 foot out the door and it had my head, but I'd rather have stayed in close conditions and my head would have been better for getting out. I would have had more emotional strength. I would have had more emotional strength to move forward in my life. But instead, I was drained, I was done in. It was that hard to get through that. I don't know if I would have survived 3 years in a day car. I was lucky to just to do 12 months.
What was your job there?
I worked in the poly tunnels, gardening. Then I worked in on the community bus. Then I started working in a charity shop outside. And I got sexually harassed.
What?
And I was too scared to deal out the bullet. In case I got into trouble and sent back to close conditions.
So I interviewed someone recently who got sexually harassed in a charity shop while in Cat D. Mm-hmm. Was it by an older woman who would first of all send you pictures? Can you remember that story?
It was by an older woman, but she was a lovely woman, and it was two women actually, and one of them, I can't. Let's put it this way, Eva. I didn't want to take any chances with this other woman because she come from a naughty London family, you know, and she drove in a BMW M5, is it an M5 or an M2? It was a soft top, it was lovely.
She wanted
to take us out of the car and I couldn't do it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I felt... Because if you start inappropriate relationships, I get sent straight back to close conditions for it, you know?
Never ends well, does it?
Was she doing it with other prisoners?
No, I don't believe so. I don't know. She probably did when I was gone.
Where did you shop?
Aye. Mm-hmm. But aye.
Yeah.
So going back then to look at your character development, like in the beginning, you're like, you're wild, you want to escape, you're fucking getting your throat slashed. Was there a point over the years where that person was crushed out of you and you were like, that was the old me now, I gotta change, I gotta do good, otherwise my life's gonna be fucked up forever?
I think when I realised it was two occasions when I really that had it in effect on us. One was when September 11th happened and I was sat in Parkhurst in the association room watching the second plane going into the towers, right? And then there was a few lads around us from a different country and I were cheering and they were in for drugs and that and they were cheering, they loved Osama bin Laden and all that. And that was like, for me, that was like a point where, hang on a minute, I'm not against my government like that. You know, so that sort of like was a defining point for us. And then the second one was a couple of months later, because they were doing a report on us every 3 years, and this lovely psychologist woman's in front of us, and she's asking us loads of questions, and I'm answering them great. And then she turned around and says to us, Stephen, what would you do if someone burgled your house and you knew who it was? And I just stumped us and I sat there for about 10, 15 minutes thinking, what would I do? I kind of turned around and said, I'd gone on and I would do this to them, I'd do that to them, and I'd burgle their house and that. And then after about 10, 15 minutes, the answer popped in my head. I phoned the police. And that's what I said to her. And she like knew that. But it took us that long to answer that question. And that's when I knew there was something seriously wrong with us. That I had to get these criminal out of us and start sowing it out so I could be safe to get back into the community.
Well, how hard was that?
It was really hard. Now, them groups, really, really, really hard and very, very challenging. You know, and, I mean, you're owning stuff about yourself that you find totally embarrassing. The stuff that you don't even see about yourself and people's pointing it out to you and trying to own it and understand it is difficult. And used to say to me, it's like pulling teeth wee, trying to get you to own anything, you know, and that's what it was like for a while for us. But I had good insight, you know, and I did have some emotional intelligence, even though I was like a teenage mentality all the time. But I managed to achieve real emotional growth and change emotionally, and that's why I love the place so much. As hard as it was, I love grinding a bit because of what I've done with us. It freed me mind.
So what was your most challenging moment?
We're in Grendon.
Your whole sentence.
I think it was standing trial for me index offence. That was the most horrifying experience, and facing my victim's family, it was just that's all that dominated my mind, was facing them. And
would you say that remorse propelled you to get on the right path?
Almost definitely. But I was still fantasising. I mean, when I was on remand and right leading up to Grendon, I was still fantasising and rationalising things in a violent way, my head, you know. And I would deny and deny and deny it. But once I start learning about my behaviours, when I'm angry and I'm shouting and I'm having a go at the screws or whatever and all that, and just having that emotional awareness of when I'm vulnerable to committing violence or to committing crimes and stuff and behaving in such a way, over time I got that emotional awareness to grow to it's really strong, and I didn't let it. I've still got the same issues today is what I had back then. I just manage them with a positive outcome these days, no matter what's going on for us.
What about you, Davey?
What, the worst?
Your most mentally challenging moment in prison?
Birmingham prison.
How so?
I had the screws on me back, the prisoners. I was putting myself on the block. I didn't know who to trust. I was mentally ill. I was stopped eating and drinking. I was hallucinating. I was lying on a concrete floor with a body belt on because they couldn't let us do because I was attacking them or threatening to attack them all the time. I didn't know where I was. That was my worst challenging experience in my life. Even my wife at the time went to the papers to get us moved.
I mean, how did you get through that?
I don't know how I got through it. I should have been dead. That's what the outcome they wanted, I think. But I got through it. And then when I got the sentence, I was laughing because I was expecting 20 years. When they said 10 and a half, yeah, I thought, piss off. To the biggie. I just went down. I got all the time back apart from the assaults on prison officers. My last 6 months of my sentence. So I went from having 18 months to do to having 3 months to do. I was out in 3 months. The categorised as a CCAT, but never sentenced to the CCAT prison. And then let us go.
I think the most damning thing about Davey's trial was that when he was in the dock, and he'll explain himself, when he was in the dock with Paddy Conroy, what actually happened there, Davey?
Paddy gave evidence first. And he blamed me for the shootings. And all he's got to do to convince the public that he never has put his evidence on podcast. If I'm wrong, I'll kill myself.
Oh. But the court well, transcripts...
I know I'm 100% right. He blamed me for shootings that were done on his orders. The violence to people that were done on his orders, he mentioned everything. It was young brother this, young brother that, trying to distance himself from us.
So he stood on the sand and blamed it purely on yourself?
He gave evidence against Davey Glover, which is there in the depositions, which I've seen.
First. The one that had Paddy there, me second in command, Scott, and Paul, and that's the order when the witness box. Paddy went first. And because my QC wouldn't show my alibi, he swore me life away.
What was your alibi, Davey?
That I was at Durham Prison between 1:30 and 3:30, visiting me father.
When Collier was...
tortured?
Why have they not reopened that case?
Because I'm admitting it now. I admit I was there when he was tortured.
But not when he was kidnapped?
No, I was there when he got kidnapped. But I had an alibi. I couldn't have tortured him all afternoon like Paddy says.
Because you weren't?
Because I was 20 miles away in Durham visiting me dad. Till 3:30.
I got to see if Paddy did brag about doing that. I mean, like...
He does.
He bragged about...
When it suits him, he puts the blame onto me. But when he wants to highlight his tough man image, well, his teeth are far new anyway. Or when he bullet mentions the shot my father-in-law and blew his legs off. Oh, they just fell off. Shot him and his legs just fell off.
Disgusting.
What the hell?
The same bloke would have tore the head off the two of them.
It's true.
So you were his fall guy.
And I wouldn't help him one iota when I'm shooting my father-in-law, because all I said tell it is, if you plead guilty and help Paddy, I'm walking away from you. And I didn't want that to happen, so I pleaded not guilty. Let them bring out what they want. But Paddy got in that box and swore my life away. He blamed the stairs in the Tandys for making Collier make a statement against me. And other things, the hat as he mentioned, just then put it on, he's got it, he's the only one with it. And when I heard him on podcast, he says, oh, why should I have to put it on? If they've got something on me, why don't they put it on? That's what he said on the podcast. So if he's gotten out of hay, put it on. Say who was telling the truth.
How does it make you feel when you hear him saying these things on podcasts?
He's never bothered his Paddy. It's not something I would really bother about. But he's just pushing away this. He forgets I've got knee kids that are all grown up. I've got knee birds new. I've got now to lose. He's got a lot more to lose than me. He's just a coward. Bullying everyone with sexual comments in there.
He's most definitely a coward. Got to say that.
If you don't do what he says, they're a nonce. Or they've been done sexual activities with kids or women or dogs or whatever. And then it's a grass. Super grass, because the grass on Paddy Conroy.
Yet nobody ever did grass on them, this is the thing. Nah. It's why I wear this T-shirt. I wear it with pride.
He says, I went to him, get the evidence and put it on podcast. I tried to help him with the thing. I admit the skate was my doing. And then I was setting Paddy up. I tried to help him. But he won't put it all down. He's just picking highlighting bits that could mean anything and putting them on.
You became a registered police informer, Davey, didn't you?
Aye.
Do you, now that you look at everything that's happened over the last few years and the way that he goes on YouTube in particular with his podcast, do you think there's potential there for Paddy to be a police informer?
Yes.
Do you believe he is?
Yes. A man that's been nicked 9 times wrong for arrest and he gets off 9 times. How well?
And I know when I was growing up the farm, right?
He would do anything to get back at anyone, he would.
Sell his own nan.
Aye. He would. Well, he did. All the family fell out with him over the mum's house. The money from the mum's house. They've all fell out with him over it.
But Cookie, you were going up to the farm, weren't you, to see him originally. That's how we inadvertently met, through you appearing as admin. And of course you're now
ex-admin. Yes.
So you were his admin.
Proud ex-admin. I went up there foolishly thinking that I could help him rationalise things in his head in a positive way and start getting some positive emotional resolve. But I only knew Paddy as a child. I didn't know him as an adult, you know, and that just wasn't going to happen. You know, he thought I was coming up there to negotiate with him on the police's behalf. Yes. And he's turning around and saying to me, because I've not asked, I've just went up and tried to calm things down. And he's saying to me stuff like, tell him that they're not getting nothing unless I get me deal. Unless I get me money back and I get everything that I've asked for. He says, otherwise I'm sticking to, I give Glover their murder details on that statement, Davey, that he give you the details to make that statement, and he's going to stick with that until he gets his deal.
And the statement that he's talking about is something which Davey can't remember doing, and this was for the infamous Viv Graham murder. And it's the one thing I'd like to clear up, because I've done 2 podcasts with you, Sean. And in the second podcast, there was a clip edited by many people on social media to say that I was laughing about the death of Viv Graham. Now, that's not something I would ever do.
That's ridiculous, isn't it?
I genuinely, right, feel for the family. I've spoken to Anna Connolly, Viv's girlfriend and partner at the time that he was killed. And I do not know who killed Viv Graham.
I've written about it.
But this statement that Cookie was talking about there was a statement which Paddy Conroy did send me back in the very early noughties. And it was basically a 6-page document written in Birmingham prison. It was a statement that Davey gave. Now, Davey, and it actually stipulates in this statement, Davey was naked and in a body belt when he gave this statement. That tells you what kind of mindset that Davey was in. It wouldn't be allowed now. But in that statement, and Davey will tell you in his own words now, Who told you to make that statement?
Paddy texted to get me to suggest Nick will be James' murderer. He never taken the details of the crime to tell the police. But he texted to get me to suggest Nick will be James' murderer.
Framing the Sayers?
Yes.
And plan to take a lie detector on that because there was two witnesses and one of them still alive, me ma's brother.
So why did Paddy tell you to make that statement?
Because he hates him. He thought it was a way of him getting off.
He was in a desperate situation. And when he got a look, he believed... was it Collier on the, Stoke on the, in the block?
Stoke.
He gave him a bit of... looking for a thin ally, looking for a strong, powerful ally, because you just shot someone in the face on the quayside. And you know, as there were going to be repercussions for that. And there's Paddy. So he feeds Paddy.
And Paddy said he had information about this. He tried to do a deal with a judge at the trial. We had a closed court and he tried to do a deal with his discs that he had, but he never had them.
Never had the disc. Never had no from the start, man.
And he tried to maintain that what was on these discs was that the Sayers were police informers. And that's where the whole lie started. This is where the whole trying to make the Sayers out to be police informers and belittle them and you know, get them into trouble, I guess, within the criminal fraternity. But they've never been informers. And this is where the whole problem started.
That's right.
But I guess from my perspective, having written Stephen Sayers' book and only having that one side of the story, the benefit for me meeting Cookie and then getting a chance to meet Davey again properly has been that the true story now, because all the pieces of the jigsaw there all starts to knit together. Mm-hmm. And it shows, you know, who really is to blame, not for the murder of Viv Graham, but who's to blame for this murder probably never, ever being solved. Mm-hmm. And because he got Davey to make a false statement and accuse the Sayers to try and get them into trouble, it probably means that murder will remain unsolved for years to come. Mm-hmm. None of us know who did it.
I don't know who. I don't know why I said it, John. I was off my head in fantasy land. I didn't even know I said it till the producer they called.
In a body belt, naked, being given a statement.
And I was five prison officers around us and three crime squad in a little room.
And I was on remand in Lower Newton Prison.
So you guys are all tuned into this then, but for the public then, why did Paddy end up in a dispute with the Sayers in the first place?
Because he was in a desperate situation. He was charged with kidnapping and torture. He's on double cat here doing a block in Durham. He comes across this bloke who shot...
Plus, the Sayers got blamed for
John Bryant's, yes. And he's fed Paddy information saying, the Sayers, he's all this and that. Will you protect me and help me?
So Robert Stokoe, the guy who Cookie's mentioning, shot the Sayers' dad at point-blank range through a car window.
I remember Stephen telling us that.
John Bryant Sayers survived that, drove to hospital, and it was Robert Stokoe who shot him. So what Robert Stokoe did was, he then, realising that he was in serious trouble for attempted murder, an attempted murder of John Bryan Sayers, who was a career criminal, mm-hmm. he then goes to see Paddy Conroy and basically feeds him the line that the Sayers are police informers mm-hmm. and that he has some discs to give Paddy Conroy to prove this. Mm-hmm. And that's why Paddy then went on this ridiculous mission about these discs. The discs never existed because they're not police informers.
But did Paddy have an incentive to do that?
Jealousy. He wanted to be the main man in Newcastle.
He did,
And when John Sayers went to prison for the armed robbery and Stephen Sayers was then locked up for extortion and blackmail of a local businessman, that left free rein for Paddy. And that was when he was approached by McIntyre, who was making a television programme to go on that show and basically promote his life of crime. The Sayers were released just before the programme was made. Approach was made via me to the Sayers family about them appearing on the programme, and they refused. Paddy went on to the programme, and as we've all seen, it's now widely available on YouTube. He went on and basically accused the Sayers family of being police informants to a national audience. At that time, I'd asked the Sayers if they would do their life story. They said they didn't want any publicity. They didn't want to do a book. But as soon as Paddy went onto a national TV programme, that was it. An unanswered lie becomes a truth. So Stephen Sayers stepped forward and wrote his own memoirs. And that's why this continues to go on. And over lockdown, Paddy feels aggrieved that I have written the book. He feels aggrieved that I have aligned myself with the Sayers family. And ultimately, he set up a YouTube channel to bully me. But unfortunately for him, he's come across somebody who doesn't take bullying. It doesn't worry me. He's doxed my address recently via one of his associates on YouTube. He continues to try and harass and bully. He tries to accuse me of sexual offences, which seems to be a common practice because he's done that with Cookie. Now he's done it with Davey. And ultimately, he seems to have not only a bizarre sexual obsession with the Sayers, but now he seems to have one with me. And this is, it's quite worrying because this guy is clearly dangerous. He is clearly unhinged, but he is a pathological liar. And from our perspective, we've come on today, really, for you to meet Davey for the first time. It's an exclusive. Davey's not really spoken at all before, except with me. Cookie has built up his own YouTube channel, and as you can see today, is somebody who has reformed. He's a positive story from the prison system. Mm-hmm. And he now knows, having spent 3 months at that farm with Paddy, exactly what's going on there. And then you've got me, who is a, you know, a law-abiding citizen, somebody who, like you, podcasts, but also writes about true crime, but who tries to get the truth and the real message out there. And I won't be bullied. And if he or one of his cronies wants to come to my house, they're more than welcome to come in for a cup of tea, but please come when the family are out.
Just a few further questions then. So when there was the attempted murder of the senior Sayers, was the friction between Paddy and the Sayers before that?
Was it?
There was.
It was alleged the Sayers went to a nightclub with a tax man.
Brian Cochran.
Stuck a machine gun to Garside's head and beat him. And that Paddy stood up for Garside.
Was he part of Paddy's crew?
Aye.
Gotcha. And what year was that?
92, 93.
So that was 92, 93. What year was the attempt on the senior?
95.
So there was stuff leading up to that then, between the two families?
It was never the families.
Paddy was being clever.
Michael Conroy got on very well with the Sayers.
Aye. Most of them do.
So it's a one-man band?
Yeah. Because the family don't want to get involved.
He's got Bullock.
Mm. And why has he got Bullock, Davey?
Because Bullock's a wandering soul and he's got nowhere else to go.
But there was a situation with Paddy's brother, wasn't there?
Aye.
And what happened there?
Paddy tampered with the gun, handed the gun, and he got the charges dropped for killing Paddy's brother.
Was Bullock shot Paddy's brother by accident?
Whose?
Paddy Conroy's brother was shot dead by Bullock. By accident.
Who is Paddy's, like...
Right-hand man.
Right-hand man.
By accident? He shot his brother dead by accident?
Playing Russian roulette?
That's bloody tragic, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I always feel...
Terrible?
I feel for the family because of that. But also I feel the fact that I always wonder why Paddy never makes reference to his brother. Mm-hmm. I've seen many families who've lost people every year pay at least a tribute on social media to somebody who they've lost, yet he never seems to do that. I always find that a bit bizarre.
That's right.
Because all family blame him. Mm.
How was it found to be an accident?
The witnesses in the pub.
So Russian roulette.
He got remanded for it at first, but he was only on remand a few weeks and then he got out because they got the gun back and had a headline trigger or something.
So 14.
So could you describe what actually happened then? Did someone gave him a loaded gun?
Put it in Russian roulette, I believe.
And he shot himself?
A bullet shot him.
Yeah. So he was found at fault for giving him the gun? Is that...
He was nicked for murder.
For murder?
But then someone took the gun away. Mm-hmm. And Paddy handed the gun in.
Went and got it and handed it in.
Right.
So there could have been foul play.
There was no charges or nothing afterwards, was there?
No.
When Bullock was released?
No charges.
Was there ever any attempts on Paddy's life?
I wouldn't say so, unless he wouldn't be. I knew, Sean. Unless what Paddy says, I ran at people putting signs. Why put signs on the gun? You can't...
No, well, it's, you know, I talked to one of my friends who Paddy's absolutely convinced has tried to kill him 3 times. And
the paranoid wreck.
And I went and told him, and he's absolutely shocked and can't believe that Paddy thinks he's been... Now he understands why Paddy's kept him at arm's length all his time and didn't want him near him and that. You know, because every time somebody like approached him out like that, he would help Paddy. You know, not try and kill him. But that's just the way Paddy is, isn't it?
He's been able to get away with telling a lot of lies because Davey hasn't been well. Mm-hmm. And Davey's never been well enough to come out and tell his story.
That's right.
And like, even the day that I went to interview Davey with Neil Jackson a few years back, when Davey arrived, he was shaking, he was very incoherent. It's why we only got 6 or 7 minutes of an interview. We were hoping to get a good podcast with him, and it was before I even started the channel. We just wanted to do it. It was going to be part of a documentary. I actually felt really sorry for Davey being put in that position. We got him there, and I wish I hadn't got him there. And I just thought we would never get to the day where Davey could actually come and speak for himself. Mm-hmm. And unwittingly, Paddy's relationship with Cookie and bringing Cookie to the farm has actually led to the, you know, led to the, you know, the interview we've been able to do today, because Davey is of sound mind now. He's on his medication, he takes his medication, and he's, as you can see, I mean, he's very coherent with regards to the facts now, and I think that's great. And I was criticised because the 6 or 7 minute video that we put out, which is, you know, a lot of people have watched it, they said, well, you've led him with the questions, you've done this, you've done that. So I rectified that by doing an interview with him, and we did an unedited video with him, and it was spot on, and it's been met with great approval. But today has been the same. You know, it's been good to get him in front of somebody who is impartial. Like you, the pair of you were impartial. You're unbiased. You don't have a side to take. I know you've been accused of being biased by Paddy as well. But ultimately, you know, you can see, you know, and you're hearing it for yourself. And I just hope that this message on your platform, because you've got a big platform and well-respected in what you do, that this message gets out to the general public more, that, you know, this has never been about setting Paddy up. This is not me trying to, you know, to coach people or coax people into believing one side of the story. It's there for everybody to see. It's black and white. And like Davey says, if he gets the paperwork out that Paddy's sitting on, you know, it would prove what Davey's saying is true, you know.
Mm-hmm. How does it feel to come here today, Davey, and get this off your chest?
Well, I feel okay with Stephen and that, and Steve.
Are you two still as tight as ever, yeah?
Oh,
still,
yeah. Oh,
oh, not as tight as him and Dez.
Went through a lot. We spend 24 hours a year with each other.
You do.
Done everything together.
We did, didn't we, Davey?
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah,
he was
my
big brother who looked after us. That's what he was, my big brother who looked after us to another mother.
So he's going to do his book now, which I think is great, and I'm going to publish it. But Cookie sent me a couple of sample chapters of a book that he was writing. But then when we got to know each other a bit better, we've done a few podcasts together, and then he mentioned about Davey, and Davey was really well. I said, you know, maybe he's do that, and Cookie and Davey are going to work on a book together.
It's going to collab.
Yeah.
Cool.
Can't
wait.
I'm going to do good. I'm going to write it. I'm going to try and write it. So that would be good.
Yeah, I wish Wildman was here. Would have loved to have met you guys, definitely.
Yeah. I see the similarities.
Definitely. I see similarities. Like, your relationship is like mine and Wildman's relationship.
Wildman was a legend, like, absolute legend. I'm glad I got a chance to meet him.
Well, I've tried to stay out of the Paddy thing, but he put a video out there and he was screaming at me and saying, "You fat bastard sidekick, Wild Man." And this was after Wild Man was dead, totally disrespecting him.
I think the problem was, ultimately, we did a trailer, which was for Operation Sears, the book that I wrote. And I asked you, as a favour, if you would put that trailer on your videos. And, you know, I can categorically state, you've never taken any sides. You don't take in sides full stop, Sean. You know, you're very professional like that. But I asked you to put a trailer on for Operation Sears, and that's what he didn't like. Sadly, that's what he didn't like. And he thought that meant that you were on our side. There's no sides, you know. I'm impartial. I can go and speak to anybody. I know people who don't get on with certain villains, and you know, I can speak to both parties. That's the whole point of being, you know, either an author or somebody who, you know, does documentaries or podcasts or whatever. You have to be impartial. But unfortunately, when you put your name to a book and there's something in there which criticises a party, they're not going to like it. And that's it. It's as simple as that.
So where's it all going then with Paddy? How is it going to conclude?
I hate to say that, you know, this has got to come to an end at some point. I personally feel Paddy Conroy will go too far with somebody and he will probably end up being arrested.
I think
what he wants, with regards to me, and I can only speak about my circumstances, I think he wants me to pick up the phone and ring the police. So then he can go onto a podcast and say, "See, I told you
he's a grass,
yeah. Blah, 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 blah." Now, I could do that. I'm not a criminal. Mm-hmm. I won't be judged by my friends or family if I pick the phone up and ring and make a report about Paddy Conroy or his friends who sit in that shed talking lies. I wouldn't be judged. Would it affect me as far as being a true crime writer is concerned? I doubt it as well. No. Maybe one or two villains who I know would say, "Well, actually, Steve, you made a statement now, I can't be involved in you." And that's fair enough. But I've written every book that I wanted to write. I've met all the people I wanted to meet. Do I see myself being a true crime writer for the next 10, 15 years? No, I want to focus on being an actor. So really, if this is the last book I do with Davey and Cookie, then happy days. I can move on. But am I going to ring the police? No, I'm not. I'm going to let my fate take its course. My life's mapped out. If someone's going to come to my house and shoot me on my doorstep at the beck and call of Paddy Conroy, then that was the way my life was supposed to go. And that's the way I live my life. Right. I've always lived it. I did the Doors for 18 years. I never made a statement about anybody on the Doors. Sean, that's the way it is, mate. And, you know, from my perspective with Paddy, I think that he will make the wrong move with the wrong person. Davey says he might get hurt. He might do. Who knows? He may get arrested and have to go to prison. The fact that his YouTube channel hasn't been shut down with some of the things that he's saying and the complaints that have been made, I would say maybe there are other powers allowing this to go on.
Yeah, I do as well, Steve.
So one last question about Paddy. Does his shed really stink of cat piss?
Aye.
Yeah.
I think it's the only pussy he gets.
And he doesn't purr.
His next video will be about Cookie and Des, I guarantee it.
Oh, well, that's all right. I don't mind.
So when's your guys' book coming out then?
Eh, I'm not sure. It'll be early next year, I imagine so.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the amount of time, you know, you guys have served and everything else you've done, it's like, how are you going to fit it in a book?
I think there's a couple of books in it, really, you know.
Will it just be a on special the time chapter?
With, title. Sorry, okay. There's definitely a good book just on me and Davey together on the streets in the West End, and that. There's definitely a good book there. Then there's another book for you there, and for me, my prison book.
That's all right, I did it party time, was all me and Wild Man, what we got up to. Yeah, and then the next one's the jail, next one's the prison.
Right, so
you could do a series.
See if I can get this knocked up really good for me. See what we can do.
And so you're focusing on acting?
Yeah, I mean, I've just done Requiem with Richard John Taylor, which comes out on Boxing Day. It's my first lead role. I play a gangster called Aaron, and it's about kids across Europe, and I'm basically going into to get this little girl because this bloke's, you know, basically t- taking a lot of money off my boss, Michael McKell, the actor, is my boss in it. And I work with the talented Nina Cranstoun, who I've known Nina for a lot of years. She's the only female professional boxing promoter in the UK. And me and her play alongside each other, and it was a great to do. So doing that, and of course the Sayers film. We start filming that all going well in October this year in Newcastle. So I play Stephen Sayers in it. I need to bulk up a little bit, I think, but between now and then. He told me that. But I'm looking forward to it. That in itself is going to be great. And I did a film called The Huntress of Auschwitz, where I played a police officer, which has just come out today.
Oh, congrats.
When I had the virus and I was down for 14 days watching Netflix here and there, and it was like, every other crime film I was watching, either had you in it or Joe Egan. I was like,
I think still my favourite one is still Rise of the Foot Soldier, purely because it's a great franchise. And
yeah,
I did the third film.
What was that dodgy film you were in? You know the one, James?
Killer Bitch?
Yes.
Yeah. Paddy does like that one. He thinks it's great. He says it's terrible acting and he's going to play Stephen Sayers. I've moved on a lot since then. But you know what, I enjoy it, and that's what I want to do full time.
It looked terrible but great fun.
It was good. The only downside was that Jason Mariner, the Chelsea headhunter, shoots me in the back of the head.
Ooh.
In that film, and he goes 1-0 to the Cockney boys. I've never lived that down, but yeah, it's fun. It's nice to get away, and it's a bit of escapism, pretending to be something you're not. The ambition is to be the villain in Coronation Street still. I've said that to you before. I'll get there eventually. I'm now starting to get a couple of castings for these soaps, so
yeah, Faith.
Yeah. I might play Cookie in Prison Stories with Dennis Nielsen.
So every time we're up here or Middlesbrough, we hear a lot of stories about Lee Duffy. Did you guys have any?
I knew Lee.
You knew Lee?
Aye.
Bloody hell, what was that like then?
He was a good lad. A bit of a hothead, but he was a good lad.
How did you get to know him?
Prison.
Which one?
Durham.
Durham.
I was 15, he was on the cons. We're both in the seg, and they put one exercise together in the cage. And then after that, I seen him a few times. Liverpool. He was in Liverpool with John. I was on the YPs and on the cons. I met him a few times. He was a hothead, mate, you could fight.
Did you see him in action?
I heard the aftermaths of a few fights.
Which ones were they?
In Liverpool prison.
We've not heard what happened in Liverpool prison.
He knocked a few of them out in the gym. He was Jim Audley.
Was that a regional thing against the Scousers or?
I think they just done something league and league. That tend to be the case. And he would just blow his head.
What did he look like?
Big, tall, blonde hair, good looking kid.
He was well respected then everywhere.
You had respect as a fighter.
Or intimidated.
Intimidating, sorry. You had respect.
And what?
Yeah, mostly.
And what was the problem with him and Viv Graham?
I think there was a problem. Until Duffy come up yet and try and fight Viv.
Because he wanted to be the hardest man, was it? And what about Sykes then? Was that before your generation, Paul Sykes?
No, I met Sykes and Jerry.
Oh, my God.
Is there anyone you haven't met?
I met Sykes before he went to the whole unit when he came to screw him with a dumbbell.
What? What was that over?
Taking the weight off Sykes.
Something
to do with the gym. And the screw said something and Sykes caved his him with a dumbbell. Got 5-6 years for the 7 years.
He liked the YPs, didn't he?
I liked the YPs.
Was that a true thing, or was that just a scare story?
where he used to act on it. He used to run out the door on the way. Pigs used to scatter around it. So it was an act, but I don't know. I never actually seen him do anyone.
And what was he like when you talked to him?
We were pouring water out the window on him down below, and he was threatening me because we were IPs.
He had a run-in with a cat, didn't he, Davey?
I got to tell the story that a lifer's cat, that the lifer had tamed, was shiting on Sicey's bed or something on his cell, and Sicey got the cat and cut it. A hat with the cat and put it on and walked out the land on the land.
So he wore a cat as a fucking hat?
like a raccoon cat.
Yes.
Who would you say was more physically, or just the presence was more intimidating, Lee Duffy or Sykesy?
Sykesy?
Aye. Really? In what way?
A bit bigger than Lee.
Bit bigger. But was he more menacing?
Aye.
Wow.
You wore a cat as a hat? No, come on.
I've heard some stories about them, like.
Which ones?
About the YPs and Leeds.
What happened there?
He's just knocked them out and take them.
What, take their booty? Holy shit.
Can't wait to read the book. Wow.
Wow. So is there anything you feel that we've missed out, Steve?
I think you've covered it all. I just think, you know, it's been great for you to meet Davey, because I think, you know, it gives you that other, the missing piece of the jigsaw on Tyneside. You've met everybody, really, I think, that you could meet now. You know, you couldn't meet Viv or Lee because they're no longer here. You've met Stephen, you've heard Stephen's side of the story.
Yeah.
You know, you've now seen Davey, you've met Brian. You know, you've had the different corners. You've seen Cookie as well from another perspective. You know, and obviously me as an impartial observer. You know, I think you've had it all now. You know, and you know you've obviously interviewed Jamie many times about Lee. So, from the Northeast perspective, I think this is like job done. You know, the only person you could interview is Paddy, and I know you've tried to do that. I think you should try. I think you've got enough ammunition now to go and at least put a request in. I don't think he'll do it because he's a coward, but I think it would be good for you to at least try one more time to get him on your podcast, because there's a lot of questions which he should answer, you know.
When you said that we tried, did we offer to get him on with you or something like that? Was that it?
Yeah, I would come on and do it. I've said on more than one occasion, I would happily sit in the same room as Paddy Conroy and do a podcast with him. I've got nothing to hide, nothing to be afraid of, nothing that I've told a lie about. I can produce whatever he wants us to produce, the paperwork. Paperwork is exactly as I've said it is. It's there, it's in order. You can pick holes in it if he wants to, but I'd happily go on a live with him. I tried, as you did, to go on his own live.
I heard about that.
We might have been a little bit naughty.
That was me, allegedly.
I mean, I didn't even recognise you with those big glasses on.
It was the idea, allegedly, came from.
But you know what? Joking aside, it was an opportunity to see how he would react with me in his face.
Yeah.
And I think that, to the general public, spoke volumes. He had his perfect opportunity on his own live to ask me and grill me. He could have humiliated me. He could have tried to do whatever he wanted. What did he do? He couldn't get us up the screen quick enough.
Well, that was his whole thing, wasn't it? His whole beef was we needed to go on and explain or be questioned by him. And as soon as we did it, we were gone within seconds.
Yeah, unbelievable. I mean, he panicked, you know, and What can you say? I think it sums him up. He doesn't want it. He wants us to continue to go backwards and forwards. And the reason I haven't done that is because it simply builds his channel up. We've seen it with other situations on YouTube. The constant backwards and forwards builds people's channels up because people like the drama. So from my perspective, in December, I decided that I was going to stop. And that's what I did. That's what I did. I stopped. So, you know, from my perspective, it's over. Today, through that door on the left, Davey. Through the door on the left. So from my point of view, I just decided really to draw close to it in December. And I'm glad I did, because I haven't watched these videos. I have somebody who watches the videos, who downloads the videos and keeps them on file. You know, there's more than one copy of them, and I'll keep them for a rainy day. If I need them, I need them. If there needs to be some kind of production of evidence, if something happens at my house, I've got all of these videos which, you know, basically tell the story from start to finish of this insane, you know, campaign of abuse against me for a period of 12 months, which totals 321 videos now and counting. And ultimately, you know, if you want to hang yourself, keep on doing what you're doing, Paddy. That's what you're doing. And you may not care, but, you know, even if I'm not here to tell the tale and I get murdered by somebody on my own doorstep because of this ridiculous farce, then there's evidence there, and that evidence points at one man, and that's Paddy Conroy and anyone associated with him in this campaign of hatred.
I think he's just trying to get, like, views off people's coattails.
I agree, but when you start putting people's addresses online, which is illegal in this country, then that is taking it to a whole new level, Jen. And, you know, it takes a certain person not to react to that, and I'm that certain person. And I will fight fire with fire, but I'll also fight fire with logic, and that's what I'm doing in this particular situation. And my silence has really hurt him, I can tell. And I'll only ever come back when I've got something to say, or when I've got somebody else who would like to say something. And that's why we've got these two gentlemen here today.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, Paddy, if you're watching this, then you've got an opportunity to come on and sit down with Steve and get all this ironed out. You said that is what you wanted. You said you had a problem with Steve. It needed to be resolved face to face. Stop dragging it out. You've disrespected my best mate after he died, which I found very offensive. I am a neutral person. I will provide this platform for you to come on and sit down, mano-a-mano, and just fucking hash this out with Steve. Stop being a little punk and doing all these crazy videos that are just mindless and doxing and attracting all these little trolls to your channel, because that's all it is. It's just toxic followers and toxic views. End the madness and come on and be a man and do the right thing. Step up, speak to Steve in the same room. Your security will be guaranteed. Davey won't be there. And sort this out. And as for you, Davey, I'm having flashbacks. I've had flashbacks of Wild Man all the way through this interview. It's like the spirit of Wild Man is in the room. Especially when you laugh. You laugh just like you laugh. Same eyes and everything. It's been a real buzz. It's been a real honour to meet you finally after Steve has spoke so highly about both of you. And all the best after everything you've been through. All the best in your lives. All the best with your book. And Cocky, bloody hell, man. I didn't understand until today everything you've been through. And everything. Right. Good God. Yeah, so power to you for having the mental fortitude to turn your life around and be on the right path right now. So
cheers,
for the people,
cheers, man.
For the people watching this, then, all the links for everybody will be in the description box below the video. So please go down and support what Steve is doing and his projects with Cookie and Davey, and let us know in the comments what you think. Do you want to see Paddy come on this platform and just sit opposite side of a table, man to man with Steve, and get this resolved, instead of just doing all these videos from a distance saying this and that and all this drama continuing and all this nonsense continuing from afar? You've got the opportunity now, Paddy, because you got our attention. You know, you brought this to me. You said something was on my channel that you had a problem with, and you said you had a problem with me that I didn't even know about. You never ever communicated this to me from the beginning. I'm a reasonable person. If you had come to me in the beginning, I would have looked at whatever it was you had a problem with and made a decision about it. But you left it so late and you escalated it without me even really knowing what the whole story was behind it. Steve's come here today and explained it to me properly for the first time. I've no idea what's been going on in Newcastle with you and the Sayers over the years, but you act like I do, and I'm in on it, and I'm with the Sayers. somehow, because I've had Stephen Sayers on, I'm neutral, and I've only come to a full understanding today of really how this whole situation has developed, because it's been explained very clearly by these guys. So end the madness now, come on, stop doing these silly little videos from afar, and speak to Steve, and that's the only way this can end.
What happens if he doesn't come on? Are you just going to leave it like that?
I don't think he's going to man up and do it.
I don't either, and I just genuinely wanted to make sure, once again, that the message gets out on a big platform, because it needs to be told, and people need to know the truth. And there will always be people who support Paddy. There will always be people who believe Paddy's side of the story. And there'll always be people who don't like me or don't like Cookie or don't like Davey. We understand that. Life is like that. But when the facts are, spelled out like we've spelled them out today, there is no getting away from it. And unless he brings that paperwork up, especially that Davey talks about, it's a key that he keeps calling people grasses, he calls people nonces, he calls people this. It's deflectionary tactics, which he's used all of his life. And that's the sad part about it. It's, Davey will tell you, he was there in the dock. You can ask anybody who was there with him in the dock. Conroy put it all on to Davey. And look what happened to Davey. It caused a mental breakdown. It caused his life to be ruined, really, mm-hmm.
So we're offering him what he wants, to sit down, to sort it out. That's what you told me you wanted, was the opportunity to speak to us and sort it out. That's what we're offering you. So you can say whatever you want. There's no way around that, really. You either come on and do it, or...
You don't, you get forgotten about.
Yeah, I've already moved on. I've moved on. I don't sit at home. I don't sit at home worried about the guy. I don't, because, why waste my life? And I've had a lot more to deal with in the last few months. Real life, not fake life. And, for me, I don't sit and worry about these idiots, and that's what they are, sadly. I just let them do what they want to do. And as I say, my man continues to download these videos and put them away for a rainy day, if that rainy day ever comes. If it does, we all know why it's come.
And I just want to say RIP your mum, Steve, and for fucking animals, any animals who have trolled you during that period of time.
I'm so sorry, mate.
Does not get fucking lower than that.
No, thank you for that.
Absolute scum.
And I want to thank everybody for the support. I mean, whether it was Cookie or whether it was you or whoever, people who reached out and offered the support. And the YouTube community, although there can be trolling, has been massively supportive. And as you know, my channel's predominantly football. We do NUFC Matter 7 nights a week. And I continue to do that throughout the whole period of my mum's illness and then subsequent death and then funeral. But that got me through because the support of the people in the chat, the moderators especially, who were looking out for us. I've just got to be thankful that, I created that YouTube community, because they've been a massive support. And likewise, a lot of the people who I met through, being an admin on your page, on your channel as well, and just the stuff that we've done briefly with me, you and Jen over the months, it's been great, and you guys have been fantastic. So thanks for support. And it helped me gain the strength, and I've just cracked on doing what I do,
And the other thing is, Steve, what do the Paddies of the world matter when you've got as much going on in your life as you do?
Yeah.
You're a prolific author. You've got your channel. I've seen that just raise up in followers. Your live streams, the sports stuff, have got massive views. You've got so much going on. Yeah. It's irrelevant, really, isn't it? All the
Of course it is. Of course it is. And that's why, because I said to Cookie before we started the interview, I was getting to the point last year where I was watching it and getting involved in it. And suddenly then you feel you've got to respond, and before you know it, you've wasted 3 hours of your day when you could have been doing something with your kids, you could have been doing something, writing a book, you could have been going out for a walk, doing whatever, you could have been doing something. And I just thought, in December I'm going to make one video, which I did with Video Craig. I did the full interview from start to finish and explained everything about this whole situation just with regards to me, and I said that would be the final word that I would give on it. And I've been as good as my word. Even when people have come on podcasts and they've tried to get us to talk about it, I've just refused. But I did say that if Davey ever came back out to do came to do something, that I would rectify that interview, because I really didn't feel that interview did Davey justice. And we never got the real Davey Glover, which is what I did, thanks to Cookie. And as I say, my relationship with Cookie only comes through the fact that he was, with Conroy for a few months, was, involved in the situation. And that's a massive positive that's come for it, because you know, for me, I can just move on, and that's what I've done. And, you know, we've come back this again. I don't have anything else to say. Unless Conroy comes on your channel, I've got nothing more to say on it, and I won't be wasting any more time on it, ever.
And that's the bottom line, isn't it? Because you do get sucked in. I got addicted a bit as well to these dramas. Yeah. And it's like, but I've realised it's the gutter. It's the absolute gutter. Because years from now, people are still going to be watching videos, for example, Davey telling his story, or Cookie telling his story. It's timeless, isn't it?
That's right.
It's inspirational, there's lessons. A year from now, who's going to give a shit about what the people are saying about Decker Heggy today, or what people are saying about Paddy Conroy today? No one's going to give a shit, are they? No. So it's just pulling yourself out the gutter, which I had to do myself, and it was my viewers who said, Sean, stop posting these podcast war videos, we're fucking sick of it, it's childish.
Yeah.
It was my own viewers who had pulled me out the gutter. And I realised I've got to go back to my roots and just, you know, putting this great, you know, content out there that people are going to watch forever.
Yes, I mean, sadly you're right, but certain names are getting clickbaited on a regular basis. I've done it myself, you know, but only whenever I clickbait someone's name on a YouTube channel, I'll do it for a specific reason, or I'm asking a specific question. You play the game sometimes, but you're right, you get dragged into that cesspit of you know, YouTube, and it can be a massive positive and can help people. We've raised over £30,000 for the Newcastle Food Bank on our NUFC Matters channel. Brilliant. By doing a t-shirt each week and raffling it off. And we get people bidding from anything from £250 to £1,000 each week on there, and it goes directly to Newcastle's food bank. We shouldn't have to have food banks, but it does. So that is my positive out of the YouTube fraternity.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, getting involved in who's done this to what and who's done this to that, and it's awful.
I've seen some channels go from producing great content now to being like the gossip newspapers. And the sad thing is they get rewarded by the views.
Yeah.
But these views are... they're toxic followers and toxic subscribers. YouTubers, if you're in the gutter, if you've become the gossip columnist of YouTube, it's unsustainable. You get the views now, but these toxic followers and subscribers will stab you in the back at the first opportunity. Produce solid content, build a lovely community of people with solid followers, and you will sustain. But get out of the gutter, for God's sake.
And get some moderators. Who you can trust.
Hey to the Atwood Arby.
And a good cameraman like James.
And a good co-host.
And a good co-host like Jen. And Neil Jackson for me.
And with the power, the divine cosmic energy power of Shu Watson, who've treated us both today. Can you see the fire in our eyes? We are ending this podcast, and we always end our podcast with a hug. So thanks, fellas. Yeah, cheers.
We end with hugs.
Oh, can't hug someone. What has the world come to?
Exactly. Come in. Right,
thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks,
you know,
mate.
Yeah,
thank you, mate.
Brilliant.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, man. It's brilliant. Fantastic. Gadfly Press is proud to announce the publication of Big Joe Egan, the toughest white man on the planet. And that statement came from none other than Mike Tyson, who wrote the introduction to the book. If you want to check it out, the link is in the description box below the video. It's got almost 5 stars on Amazon, and it is mind-blowing stories of Joe's rise in boxing. You've got the crime story of what went down at the pub, the war at the pub, Joe's incarceration, and how the toughest white man on the planet could not be held down, how he rebuilt his life. He's gone from strength to strength, and what he's, you know, you can see right now what he's doing all over the world. So links will be in the description box below the video. Thanks for watching.
And if you want to see the full podcast, it's on our channel now.
In which he talks about Michael Francis, Tyson, and loads of big names that he's worked with. Fascinating stories.
Check it out.
So the book, Big Joe Egan, Toughest White Man on the Planet, is available in all 3 formats, audio, ebook, and paperback, worldwide on Amazon, link in the description box.
Here at Boomer and Jen, we offer a wide range of organic or recycled clothing. We all know our planet is important. We only have this one. So it's vital that we all work together to slow down and reverse the changes to the environment. Whilst we all know that big industry are having a significant effect on pollution, here at Boomer and Jen, we believe that if we all make small changes, we can do our part. Fast fashion causes detrimental effects to the planet. Not only is nearly 20% of global wastewater produced by the fast fashion industry, but there is a considerable amount of fast fashion ending up in landfill. So let's move away from fast fashion items that are only worn once or twice and start wearing extremely comfortable, durable and environmentally friendly clothing and ethical jewellery. Boomer and Jen was founded in a quiet town in Devon in 2018. It has now gone from strength to strength as the world is becoming more aware of the current climate situation, helping our customers to buy sustainable, quality clothing. All of our products are fair trade and registered with the Global Organic Textiles Standard Association. Check us out on organiccottonclothing.co.uk.